What's up, everybody? Welcome to the best gaming podcast ever, brought to you by GameRanks.com. You're listening to Whiplash by 8-Bit Bandit. It's going to be our 33rd episode. Let me introduce the team. There's Dennis.
Hey, how's it going?
Jen.
That's me.
Myself, Jacob Saylor, and finally, GameRanks writer Eric Swain.
Nice to be here.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, continue.
Okay. Well, on that note,
nice to be here.
We were gonna talk about E3 this week, but we're gonna wait until next week, so it's a little bit closer to the show date. But before we get started, we have a couple of announcements. We're probably sure you already knew this, but Matt has officially left the podcast for now. He said he wants to come back, but he's in the middle of a bunch of real life problems right now. So we'll be looking forward to the day when he comes back. Also, last week, I believe, Jen's YouTube channel went live. She's heading the GameRanks TV YouTube channel. She's published, what, 3 videos now, Jen?
Yes, I believe so. 3 videos.
And they're super freaking awesome. So go check those out.
Totally unbiased narrative right there. They're freaking amazing. You have to watch them or you will probably die. So go to the channel. It's like youtube.com/user/GameRanksTV. All one word.
Yeah, or you could just Google GameRanksTV and see what comes up.
God damn it, that's so much easier.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our news. First up, we're going to talk about how Sony is creating a Shadow of the Colossus movie. Josh Trank, the director of Chronicle, is going to be heading this. What do you guys think?
I mean, I'm excited. I have been a fan of that game, you know, Team Eco, the stuff that they do for a long time, and I think it's going to adapt really well.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say. I think it's going to be the exact opposite. I mean, how do you adapt Shadow of the Colossus? It's a game. It's a story that can only really be told in a video game. It literally is. Unless
you think that. Do you think that it's the experience can only happen within the game?
I think you can get a sort of adaptation of the basic plot that's going in, but you're going to lose a lot of what makes Shadow of the Colossus Shadow of the Colossus. Because most of it is literally a guy on his own, no one to talk to, no dialogue, wandering around beautiful scenery looking for monsters to slay. And that isn't good. That isn't going to make entertaining cinema.
Well, I'm kind of in the middle, actually. So we've got all sides of the spectrum. But I think that if you got the right director, I'm not sure Josh Trank or the guy, whatever, is going to be a good director for it, but he did pretty good with Chronicle, so it'll be interesting to see what he does with this. On the other hand, it's kind of weird when you have big lumbering monsters on the screen, like I've heard are in Shadow of the Colossus. I haven't played the game myself, so I can't really talk about it too much, but I think that's going to be really hard to translate over to the big screen.
I think with technology, it's going to be okay. And I think there are a lot of movies out there that have minimal dialogue that get across a lot of points. It could actually end up being a really smart movie. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but those movies are directed by the likes of, like, Terrence Malick and him ahead of it. Can you imagine a Shadow of the Colossus movie by Terrence Malick?
I agree on that point.
I'm glad you guys know who he is, but...
I understand a higher quality, like a higher caliber of director or producer would be great, but this might force this person to think in terms of less dialogue. I am way too easy to please when
it's not
comes
less,
to this stuff.
But
so,
it's not less dialogue, it's
no
dialogue.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he can talk to aggro and shout unintelligible words to aggro.
That's going to make this a very different movie. If he only... It's going to be like... Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Tom Hanks.
Tom it's Hanks as Wanderer.
No, but Wilson. That's what's going to be. The aggro would be just a stand-in for Wilson in that case.
Oh, my God. That was so sad in the Castaway movie. that volleyball just drifted off into the ocean.
The one thing that makes me hopeful is the fact that Sony is a movie studio as well as a game maker who owns the property.
Yeah, and Sony's always been good at making movies. There's very few bad movies that come out of Sony.
Dennis, what do you think?
Man, I have no idea. I haven't played. I've played Shadow, but it's been so long that I didn't remember much of it. So I have no opinion. All right.
Did you play it through to the end?
No.
Have you? Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh my God. So it's like you've never played the game.
The ending is the one thing I could see translating to cinema, but to get there, I don't see how they're going to do it.
It's literally a 16-hour game with the last 30 minutes being the concentration of the plot, which is amazing.
With 30-second cuts, with like four 30-second cutscenes scattered about in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So we're all torn. We're all across the board, is I guess the general consensus.
Yeah, everybody. I am in the middle. Dennis doesn't know. People do well, and Eric is. He doesn't think it's going to do well at all.
Well, to be fair, just because they've signed a director, just because they plan on making it, it doesn't mean it has any chance of happening.
Well, remember what happened to Halo. That thing went into development hell for like years.
Or BioShock, the BioShock movie, and there are hundreds of movies that fall into this development hell every year that you've never heard of.
I'd rather they be in development hell than under U-Bowl.
Ugh.
I'm saying. But
yeah.
Okay, moving on. We're going to talk about our next piece of news. Peter Molyneux, as most of you know, moved away from Lionhead Studios about a couple weeks ago, if I remember correctly. He's finally discussing his first upcoming project. He says it might actually be out within the next 6 weeks. He only has 12 people working at his studio right now. He says he wants to bring on about 8 more people and make that number 20. So it's very possible this will be like a portable handheld game, but...
No, he says here that it's a mobile and social he's interested in.
Okay, cool. Well, then it will be. It's going to be a mobile game.
6 weeks sounds. 6 weeks sounds pretty fine in that timetable.
Yeah, it's just
it depends on what he's going for. Unfortunately, he doesn't go into any details about what he's going for, so we have no idea of whether it's going to be doable or not.
Uncharacteristically, yes. Too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Here's my thing. If you're going to hire 20 people, why not hire one more so that there are 22 people working at 22 cans?
Oh my God.
Because as soon as you have to hire that one extra person that you didn't know you needed,
you fire somebody else.
I thought you were trying to make a really dry joke, and I actually thought it was really funny.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got that. It's just... The thing is, I'm sure that's going to be a cheesy headline. When he does do that, that'll be a cheesy headline on a slow news day.
Yeah, I'll probably be the one who wrote it.
So I guess the thing to take from that news article for me is, like, I'm curious to see what Peter Molyneux is going to do with a mobile platform because of the big titles that he's done before, because of, you know, Dungeon Keeper and Black and White and Populous. Fable and... Yeah, everything. Like, I want to know what it's going to be like, and I have no basis for this. There's nothing. I can't even guess.
If I could see this like as a return to his days at Bullfrog when he did Populous and Syndicate, because those things I could easily be sun with like a new interface or that style of game, not those games in particular. The more simple strategy orientment development for mobile games, that sounds great to me.
Well, actually, quoting PickyGeek.com, he says, "I'm fed up to the back teeth of consuming other people's visions. Why can't we have stories about me?" I think that if he finds like a major publisher for whatever title this may be, I think that most of the ability to have this published is going to come from his fidelity as a developer. People know his name and they know he's a good developer. But I also think it's going to be something totally out of the box and different.
But do you think he'll actually need a publisher? Like, do you think it's... Because, well, I mean, if they're going to be doing it...
It's not necessarily that he needs one. I'm just saying if he does look for a publisher, you know, it'll be on that ground.
Yeah.
No, that's fair.
All right. Anything else, guys? Before we move on? All right. I assume that's a no.
Oh, well, wait. Hold on. Okay. No, there's something that I was kind of interested in talking about, and I don't know if this is interesting to either of you, but it's just, I guess, a talking point. I can't believe the Wii U is still changing. Like, they might be adding analog sticks. Like, shouldn't
I thought they had analog sticks.
Not dual analog sticks. But the thing is,
misremembering last E3? Or did they change it in between? Because I thought it had, like, the dual sticks, and it was just, how are you going to be able to control this thing with a screen in between?
I didn't really care, so...
I didn't think they had dual analog sticks. I thought there was only one, and there was a D-pad. But the point is, there, you know, the news was released where a developer tweeted a picture of a redesigned tablet controller for the Wii U, and it has dual analog sticks, which it didn't before. So... they're changing this so late in the game, and developers have been having such a hard time with their SDK that it's like, I don't understand how the Wii U is planning on having any launch titles at this point.
No, it's got launch titles. It's got Arkham City and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Well, all those games. Nintendo's first party studios, and they, you know, just their main development team as is, they don't really have much of a choice in it. You know? I mean, they're going to develop games for Nintendo because that's where they work. So whether they like the changes in the Wii U's design or not, that's how it's going to be.
Okay, I found an older picture of the Wii U. They had analog sticks, but they're more like the PSP nubs rather than full analog sticks.
Mm.
So that's what they changed. They updated the analog sticks.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I don't see why
that's a problem, though. Did they, like, change them up differently on the Wii U controller itself, or
the Wii U controller now has like the Wii amp, the nunchuck analog stick, instead of like what looked like what I can only see is like PSP style nubs.
Or for me, like coming from some like the slightest development background as I can possibly have, it does change up game design. It changes up portability. Things might have to be remapped. Like, if they were having such trouble with the development kit to begin with, like, there were a lot of companies coming back on it and saying that, you know, it's not working properly, they're not even able to create a game for it, that, I don't know, it's probably killing third-party development by just adding all this stuff, because, I mean, they just finally got the development kit ironed out, only to add another facet that has to be integrated.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. When I say that... there's going to be people who have to develop for it just because it's their job. Third-party development probably is screwed up pretty bad right now. I was speaking more of just the first-party studios.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and move on. I think we've beat this dead horse long enough. So our piece of news is coming up, as well as our hot topic, kind of go line in line. We're going to talk about how 38 Studios has officially laid off their entire staff. Over the past couple weeks, 38 Studios has gone through a ton of different things, and none of it was good, to say the least. I think their total debt is like somewhere in the range of $200 million, and they had to pay off $12 million in one payment, and they couldn't even pay off that one $12 million payment. So now they're really in deep, and the state of Rhode Island has had to help them out of this huge hole that they dug themselves into. So our actual piece of news, like I said, is that they've officially laid off their entire staff, which is not good.
And not only 38 Studios, but the other studio they own, Big Huge Games, they laid off everyone there.
Yeah, Big Huge Games is a developer behind like Rise of Nations and stuff, if I remember correctly.
Rise of Nations or Catan for the Xbox.
But
I think they did the Catan port for Xbox as well.
But this sucks, man. REA Studios, Kingdoms of Amalur was a good game. And like we talked about, I think, in podcasts before, they have their codenamed MMO Copernicus coming up. So
is that even going to happen? Because do they even have the people to work on that anymore?
That's what I've been wondering, especially after the news today of all their staff being let go. But it sucks, man. Like, I don't think another MMO would have succeeded even if the game had been made, because that genre is just so saturated right now. But
it's even worse than that. The extra news that came out today was the Rhode Island governor saying this Kingdoms Amalur, it sold 1.2 million copies, and to break even, it would have had to sell 3 million,
yeah.
And it broke EA's sales estimates with 1.2.
Yeah, man. You gotta wonder if like the government of Rhode Island was like playing them somehow. You know?
I want to know what exactly Kurt Schilling was spending all that money on that 3 million copies were needed to sell.
I don't know, dude. And we'll probably never know.
Well, the thing is, if Rhode Island eventually has to take assets like the IP and everything from the company to get its money back, we might know.
He was on a campaign for world domination. He was buying all kinds of things.
It's really unfortunate because I was at New York Comic Con before they released Kingdoms of Amalur. I sat in on a panel with the guys from 38 Studios and the guy who wrote Kingdoms of Amalur, and they had this grand idea about being a series of games. They didn't just want one game, they wanted a lot of games to come out, and they're talking about all this work they put into like the backstory and the Bible that was 600 pages long of just backstory that didn't even make it into the game. And it's just, hearing about this is really, really depressing. Like, to think about all the work that these people put into this stuff, and now they're laid off. Like, good job, you don't have a job anymore. Like,
it's so hard to think that any game that sells like 1.2 million copies, it's so hard to think game did not make a profit. You know what I mean? If anything sells 1.2 million copies, or most things at least, whether it's in video games or not, I feel like that should be satisfactory in making a profit. And when you hear that they had to sell 3 million just to break even, there's something wrong there.
Well, if you look at like what they were, and this is actually symptomatic of all that work that didn't make it into the game, all this plan for a series of games, and it's just like, okay, so you're spending the money for like a trilogy, but so far your output is only one game. That's a big problem.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I don't even want to know what the salaries of Todd McFarlane and R.A. Salvatore were, because they have to be expensive unto themselves. And do they really add much other than a few headlines that they're working on this game that someone else couldn't?
Well, not only that, you got to wonder how much Kurt Schilling was getting paid.
Well, R.A. Salvatore was he was the one who wrote that Bible, so
yes,
he essentially was paid to write a whole book. Like, that's what they
several
paid
books
for.
From the sound of it.
Yes, well, it depends on what kind of books we're talking about here.
But the thing is like, that's not the only news of like all the layoffs. If you follow developers on Twitter, like some of them, like stories are coming out that they hadn't been paid in a month, and that health care benefits have disappeared back in March.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a little depressing to think about what people go through for their employers, assuming like just trusting your employers, and how quickly you're kind of thrown out on the curb whenever they decide, nope, this isn't going to work, you're gone.
Well, I guess I don't know how the game development field is in its job market. Jen, you might know better than me. But I think that when you're at a developer like that and you're being led by people like Kurt Schilling and others, that you kind of feel safe. You have a job at a place that is already getting recognition, even though it hasn't existed that long. So I think that was part of it, at least in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a lot of trust involved even in smaller companies, but whenever you go into it thinking, okay, this is an established studio, they put out a lot of games in the past, it's not like you're going into, like, I don't know, my friend worked at Budcat Games and they went under. And, it, you know, you kind of, Budcat Games ported games to the PlayStation 2. You kind of expect at some point that company is going to shut down. Like, that's not a big deal, but with big, huge games especially, like, I 38 Studios aside, even just big, huge games, that going under was baffling to me. Like, I was so surprised when I heard about that.
Yeah. But I think this is a good point to go into our hot topic. We can, by all means, we can continue talking about 38 Studios, but just to go ahead and get it on the board, we're going to talk about studio closures and sort of the development and the time surrounding those closures. Unless you guys want to keep talking about 38 Studios.
I got one last thing to say. Okay. And that was when the governor came out to give that press conference about what their talks with 38 Studios were going on, and then the reporters asked them, what about them laying off their entire staff, and he didn't know a thing.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
It happened 2 hours beforehand, and he didn't know it had happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, this stuff is just not good. The whole past week and a half has not been good for the games industry at all.
The bright end of it is, if you've been paying attention on Twitter, it's like retweets of people offering jobs to all the people laid off, setting up people pointing out to where who's hiring in those area states for their jobs, and what was it, the IGDA putting together a fact sheet on how to help them out for health insurance and for new jobs and incomes.
Well, Polygon, they've actually published an entire page for you know, game developers who need a job. Yeah. They've published an entire page of different outlets and stuff who are looking, or development studios who are looking for new staff.
I know, it's just, I never saw, it's just like on Twitter, it was like, it's literally a solid, on my Twitter stream, was a solid block of like people trying to help people who had just been laid off find this jobs for everyone at 38 Studios, and I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, man. Like, I'll tell you right now, the gaming press and, you know, the development side of the video games industry, you know, in most sort of circles, I feel like they're, those two sort of have more conflict than they do mutual benefit. But in terms of our industry, I feel like that's different. I remember when I went to E3 in 2010, somebody's talking on Skype a lot. When I went to E3 2010, we stayed at this hotel, and there were some guys there from Ignition Entertainment, and we went up to the top of the hotel, and we talked with them each night of E3, and they would actually tell us that they wish they were us, and he expects that we wish they were them, in terms of us being developers and them being part of the press, which I thought was really interesting. So it kind of goes line in line with what you were saying.
Okay, so from the perspective of somebody who's been on both sides of it, because I literally have, like, I, 2010, I was working at an iPhone developer, and, you know, it was really shitty conditions. I got paid $200 for a month of work, but I was their lead creative developer. I was constantly pumping out contracts for them that, you know, that was making them money. They were getting contracts, or they were getting contracts off of these proposals that I was creating. And I have to admit, being on, writing about it is so much nicer than actually being knee deep in it. And I know that's me saying that, you know, 4 years of college is down the drain, but I really wish I had just gone to school for journalism, because it's so much easier to be removed from it and not have to be knee deep in development.
Sorry.
It's scary to work for a developer, because everything teeters on success, especially smaller indie studios. You know, if they can't sell their game, then you're fucked and you're out of a job.
On the bright side, though, I think that there are going to be plenty of video game journalism outlets who would be happy to have you on their staff because of your development background.
Yeah, I think it's just made me bitter, though. Like, I don't think it makes me happy or nice. I think I'm just, like, really bitter about it. I've written articles about, you know, being in an independent studio and being taken advantage of, because a lot of independent studios tend to take advantage of their employees.
Right. Before we go too much further, I just want to let everybody know that Ian Fiong has joined us in the podcast now.
Hey, I'm late.
Yeah.
Let's keep it building. Ian, I'm late, Chung, you know?
Ian, just so you know, we're talking about studio closures, and we're talking about the development, sort of the times around those studio closures. And mm-hmm. we've talked about 38 studios a little bit, now we're just sort of doing a smorgasbord type deal.
I used to be in development. Well, kinda. I was in publishing. And, yeah, we had similar problems because everything that, you know, our company, the bonuses were hinged on the success of the games that we published. And we took on a really big game. We took on Hellgate London for Southeast Asia and, I guess, Australia. We covered the whole place. And that was supposed to be the thing that made us, you know, the thing that made our company big. And the game failed. It really failed. Like I think we put in $2 million into it, and this was, you know, yeah, we had money, but everything hinged on it. And because we didn't get the game to be successful, I mean, it wasn't really our fault. It was the game sucking. It was the fault of it. But, yeah, because that didn't happen. We didn't get our bonuses. We didn't get our IPO. None of us got bonuses that we were supposed to get. Like, I think we were supposed to get, every employee was supposed to get, like, $100,000, because we weren't being paid a lot at the time. We were being paid maybe half of the industry standard. Mm-hmm. So that really sucked, yeah.
So, Ian, just because I have to know and out of curiosity, like, what was your specific role in development? I don't think you've ever told me.
Oh, I was in marketing.
Marketing? Cool.
So yeah, I was in copywriting and PR and all that shit.
Hey, I did that for $200 for that month. I was not only a lead designer, I was the PR person.
Oh, man.
It's fucking terrible.
I was paying a lot more than that, but it's still terrible.
Fuck you!
It was terrible by Singaporean standards because rent there is really high. So let's just say that half of it went to rent.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's crazy. So tell us more about how those bonuses worked in keeping you from getting your full payment. Like, why were you not getting those the way you should have?
Because we're a relatively small company, like 70 people, the thing that we all agreed to when we, you know, when we joined the company was that we'd be getting paid less, we'd be working a lot, but it would all pay off, you know? That,
right.
That everything would pay off if the game was successful. We would get everything that we were owed, supposedly. Like, I was getting paid $2,000 a month. And this is not including the allowances that they were giving me, because, you know, I had to move there to Singapore and things were expensive. But yeah, it was $2,000 a month. That was the basic.
It's like 1,000% more than I was making.
It's actually 10. Yeah, that's 1,000%. Yeah, that is 1,000%. Yeah, I was going to say 100%. No, 100% would be 400. But yeah, so this is 1,000%. Yeah, so. We were working working on assets off of that, and the idea was that once the game sold really well, we would get an IPO, like a company would go public, and we would all get a share of the company. This is usually what is promised to all these companies. And I think 38 Studios is the same thing, all these contract employees. Like, if the game is successful, then 38 Studios would go IPO, and each employee would get, like, maybe 0.5% of the company, and then they could sell back the share to Kurt Schilling or whoever and make, like, $100,000. It's the same thing here, you know?
Right.
So that's what we had. Like, we were promised 0.5% of the company, and then we'd be able to sell it, and, you know, we'd get a lot of money for it, basically. But obviously the game didn't sell very well, so, you know, that didn't happen. We didn't get IPO, and this is not the company's fault. This is just how it is, right? The boss said, okay, we're not going to get IPO this year. Maybe next year, you know, we're going to keep pushing. And so at that time, I think a lot of the employees left. Not because, you know, it's a shit company or whatever, but because people get burned out after a while, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, they're working like 60-hour weeks, and then, you know, they don't get the bonus that they're supposed to get.
The game quality suffers as a result of that, right?
Yeah. People get dispassionate after a while. You know, people are like, ah, this game sucks. I hate working in video games. I hate working in QA. Like, the people who, you know, the turnaround I noticed was very high with the QA, because we actually did QA for the game. And these people were really tired of the developers not really listening to our feedback. Because, like, a lot of the time, when a game is buggy, it's not because the QA team sucks, it's because the programmers don't listen to the QA people.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually what happens, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit about one studio closure that, much like Big Huge Games, was a huge surprise, and they're also a creator, or were a creator, of RTS games, Ensemble. I was super surprised when Ensemble got closed, because not only was their last game, Halo Wars, really successful in the marketplace, or at least I remember it being successful, but it was also a high quality game. It got good reviews everywhere.
But how much of that money went to Ensemble and not to Microsoft?
Right.
I don't know. Right. But my question to our podcast here, and especially our two resident game developers, so to say, was, why do you guys think that Ensemble got closed? Like, what do you think was going on behind the scenes when Microsoft issued that pink slip to Ensemble?
From my perspective, typically whenever larger companies like Microsoft, Sony, you know, THQ, Activision, when they close studios, it's because they don't see a potential for profit in the studio's future. Like, whether you've done a really good job on a game that they gave to you, like the Halo franchise, they kind of gave them that. They're like, yeah, you're going to work on this. And they acquired the studio to work on it. And then they just don't know where they're going to go with this. And they don't know how
I
to...
I think I might have us...
Okay, go ahead.
Let's go.
Well, it's because one of their canceled thing was Titan, the Halo MMO, which was canceled soon after. I can see that being a big reason why the studio's canceled. You pour all this money into the development of an MMO that you cancel. Suddenly, that's a huge money sink of the studio you have to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't keep pouring money into it. From the looks of it, there were 6 canceled projects by the time the studio closed.
Whew.
Ouch.
Wow, that's a ton of projects. Especially if there's an MMO involved. Like, an MMO is easily 3 games worth of development in one.
Sure, yeah. Have you guys read the Activision thing with Bungie, the contract?
I have not.
It got sealed like hours after it was made public.
Okay, well, I read the thing, and one of the clauses there was that the game would have to sell like 750,000 copies for Activision to maintain interest in Bungie or something like that. Not 750,000, but $750 million worth of sales. It would have to get, you know, that much.
I don't think that's possible.
I know, I don't think so either, but, well, you know, that's how it is.
Oh, no, I'm doing the math. Hold on, I gotta do the math. No, I'm sorry, but 750 million off, is that gross or net?
Gross, I think. Yeah. Yeah, they'd have to have sales. I mean, they not sell that many copies, obviously, but get that much money from selling the game. So
imagine 750 million copies sold. Like, that would be the most successful company ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, either way, it's a really high number, and they definitely want the game to succeed. And if they don't get the sales master bonus or whatever it's called, then Activision has the right to fire all of them. You know, that's how this whole thing is. I think the contract between Microsoft
37 million copies.
Yeah, that's what they want. And I think the game's a subscription base. Yeah.
Oh, if it's subscription based, then you can make the money back. But 37 million copies just to get that money back.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, like, I think the basic is 500 million, and then if they make 750 million, then they get a bonus or something. I need to read that whole thing again. But yeah, it's a lot. Maybe I'm messing the whole thing up, and the 750 million is the money that they get or something. I don't know, but. Either way, it's a really high number, and I suck at math. And
I do too. Don't worry, Ian.
I'm pretty sure
that back on our Game of the Year special for the best first person shooter, I screwed up and tally on the vote, and I just didn't say anything. So I'm just being.
This is the time when you're choosing to let this be known. Wow. Hey,
why not?
When no one can do anything about it.
Yeah. Too late, huh?
Too late.
So I think Microsoft and Ensemble, the same thing was there. You know, like, Halo Wars would have to sell a certain amount, and it would have to have, like, a Metacritic score of 90. You know, that's... maybe not Metacritic, because back then it wasn't really a big thing, but I think the sales would definitely have to exceed a certain number, otherwise it will close the studio. And apparently... Halo Wars didn't sell well enough. You know, it sold well.
It was like 2 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 2 million. Yeah.
And Metacritic of 82.
Right,
good game.
Unfortunately, when you're talking about bigger studios like Microsoft and Sony, they don't look at the creative potential within a studio. They look at how they can sell the most and make the most money, and that's, I mean, big corporation. So, I mean, that... I don't know. It never really surprises me that much whenever a big company steps in and is like, that's it, it's not happening. I mean, I made a list of a few companies that have closed in the past year that we might be surprised to hear. Some that I didn't even realize they closed. Like, I feel kind of bad for not knowing that they closed. I don't know if you guys are...
Yeah, no, we want to hear the list.
Yeah.
We definitely want to.
Okay, Over the last year, every week, like, you hear a studio close.
I picked some bigger ones that I wasn't surprised about, or that I was surprised about. With one, I wasn't that terribly surprised. But okay, so in January of this year, actually, big studios closed by Sony. They were shut down by Sony. They're the ones who made the launch title Little Deviants for the PS Vita. So there's this company created to make this game for this new platform, and Sony is basically like, we're not moving forward with them because we want to focus on other ideas. We don't like their ideas. We're focusing on other ideas.
So wait, this was a Sony-owned studio?
That's Sony-owned studio, yes.
If they can just shut them down, then yeah, it's a Sony studio.
Well, the idea is that it could just been created for the launch title and they shuffle the people around back to other studios.
They did say some people were moved, but not everybody. Keeping with Sony, they closed down Zipper in April, which I did not know about.
I heard about that was a big thing.
So
I got shamed because I bought their game. I bought their last game.
Unit 13.
Mag.
Yeah. It's pretty. Unit 13
is their last.
Yeah, but Mag.
Yeah, Unit 13 is their last game.
Yeah,
but Mag closed down. That was the big thing. There's.
Yeah. There was that. In 2011, Bizarre Creations was shut down by Activision.
Yeah.
Bizarre Creations. They've been around since, like, the 80s. They've been around forever. Forever. And Activision shut them down. For those who don't know, they did, for recent titles, they did Geometry Wars. I don't actually know why. Like, I'd have no clue why you would do that. They've, like, made a ton of great games over the years, and if Geometry Wars is any indication, it's that you can't just shut them down, because next year they might make something fucking fantastic.
Geometry Wars was, like, the top-selling game on the Xbox Live Arcade Marketplace for, like, ever.
And it came out to Apple iOS.
It's, apparently it was because no other company wanted to buy them out, so they shut down the studio. And then most people who were, like, the senior-most members of Bizarre Creations formed Lucid Games. So now Lucid Games is essentially Bizarre Creations.
The thing is that the way these studios works is that they tend to, like, operate on, like, a knife's edge, where they have... They, and sometimes they have no choice. They have to put everything into one basket, hope it succeeds, and then they get to move on to the next thing. And the thing is, I'm looking at their last two games. I don't think either of them sold well. Blur and James Bond 007 Bloodstone.
Bloodstone was, that one didn't sell very well. I thought that Blur was actually a fairly popular title with racers. I don't know, though. I'm not a racer.
It wasn't. It was a terrible game.
Okay, there you go. It was a terrible game.
You guys are missing a huge one, though. Pandemic?
There are a few huge ones. There's Pandemic.
You can go first.
No, I'm just saying, we've got to, I'm doing the slow reveal. I'm doing the slow reveal on this.
Well, so, tell us the rest of it, okay?
Okay, Jay? I did kind of understand was Chaos Studios, which came up with Homefront and the Frontlines series. So I'm assuming after the poor showing of Homefront, THQ just shut them down. What I don't understand, though, is that the Homefront sequel is now being handled by Crytek. The series was good enough for them to keep going with it, but not good enough to keep the studio open.
And that was a multi-million seller.
It sold a lot, yeah.
But it did sell a lot.
It's one of those titles that sells a lot, but you know that the people who bought the game weren't impressed with it.
So mad.
So
I think that's why they laid them off, because they want Crytek, which actually makes a good games, to do it compared to... I mean, I would buy a Crytek game, you know, Homefront 2. I'd buy it because Crytek, you know. But obviously the original developers suck, so, you know.
Would they use the CryEngine on it?
Yeah, honestly.
Probably. So it'll be different. It'll be different, but people will probably still buy it.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next studio that got closed down?
This is I made a short list, and this is the biggest studio that I consider the biggest shutdown of 2011. The biggest surprise was Team Bondi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Being shut down. No, it was not a surprise.
That is huge. Nope, that's not a surprise to me.
For those of us listening who don't know what this company's made, could you fill them in?
L.A. Noir.
They made L.A. Noir.
The only game.
One game.
Yeah, and
they had a lot of internal stuff happening, like with not paying their people, a lot like what we're hearing right now.
And the boss is a jerk. Fucking asshole.
They also wasted 5 years of capital, of Rockstar's capital.
Yeah.
No, I heard.
Oh, yeah.
There was a huge, from my rumblings, from what I heard, that there was a chance L.A. Noir was not going to be released, and this was like a year and a half before it came out, that there was a chance that Rockstar just would close them down and it won't be released.
Wow. So what happened was Rockstar took over the development and finished it for them, because the boss at Team Bonda is an asshole. Nobody likes it. Like, all the former employees have nothing but bad things to say about the guy. And Rockstar actually treated the game well, like gave it the treatment it deserved, finished it, and that's why we have the game. If it was in his hands, you know, it would never come out, or it would suck.
All right.
Unfortunate.
Well,
I should tell you something. 38 Studios just closed.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Oh, really? No. I thought you were just talking about
that's right. That's right, he walked in after we finished talking.
Ian,
that was perfect! Oh my god, that was so perfect!
I'm
my god, you guys, wait! 38 Studios closed! That was so perfect, Ian.
Wait a minute. When you mean they closed, do you mean they just closed? Because they just, earlier today, they just laid everyone off. They hadn't closed yet.
They're gone. They shut down the studio.
All right, well, we're too confused in the middle of a podcast right now to go about figuring this out. So we're already running up close to our time here. So let's go ahead and move into what we've been playing. Obviously, since we have five people this week, let's not spend like 10 minutes on each person. Yeah. So, Dennis, let's go ahead.
I haven't played much, but I did play, I believe I played a few rounds with you on League of Legends.
Wasn't that this past week? I'm not sure.
It could have been this past week.
I don't know.
Might have been this week. Either way, it was pretty good matches we'd bid.
Yeah, I got that. Actually, yeah, I got that 125-1 game with the Mulan guy.
No one else here plays League of Legends. You guys need to get on it.
League of Legends inside jokes.
Ian.
I play Dota sometimes. Dota 2.
Come play League of Legends with us. Anyways, Dennis, anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Eric, how about you? Tell us what you've been playing the past week.
I finally got around to playing Dear Esther and Journey. Yeah, so I'm a few months behind everyone else, but yeah, those both of them are pretty great.
Tell us about Dear Esther first. I want to hear about Dear Esther.
Dear Esther, if you don't know, it's just a simple adventure game where you just walk around an island and you get dictated to. But it is just one of the weirdest freaking games that has almost nothing in it.
I loved it.
I think it's because of its minimalism that I had to go back into it just to see what the hell was going on. And I'm still not sure I got what was going on, so I might have to go back again. And the fact that it's so short is that I'm actually able to do that without like hours of just needless stuff to get to the point that I need to check out over and over. Yeah, it's just interesting.
One of our writers here at Gamering, she's been on the podcast before, Molly Carroll, she actually wrote an editorial on Dear Esther, which was really solid. So if you haven't read that, just go to Google and type in Molly Carroll Gamerings, Dear Esther, or something like that. But
I had a laundry list of things about Dear Esther that I was waiting to actually play before I read them, so I'm caught up.
Oh, okay. All right, well, tell us about the other game you've been playing.
Well, no, I played two other games, but Journey was great, and you've heard everyone say that it's emotional experience, music beautiful, visuals beautiful, but the big game that I really want to talk about is Binary Domain. I just finished it.
Oh, Ian! Yesterday.
I love Binary Domain! Yeah.
I know! Sorry. You pushed me onto it, Ian. I heard you raving about it. It says, okay, I'll go check it out. I think it's going to make my top five for the end of the year.
I told you, but it's better than Mass Effect 3. Everybody said, oh, Mass Effect 3 is good.
I'll play Binary Domain. But I'll trust you on that. But no, Binary Domain, it's you think it's just a shooter, except it's like a shooter with a brain. Yeah, I know. Who thought that a shooter, a sci-fi shooter, has a brain?
And
the thing is like some of the things that seem tacked on, after a while, they don't feel tacked on. Like the conversations engine communication between the you and the other members of your, I guess, party is the way to put it. It doesn't feel tacked on after a while, and it's just a damn good shooter. It's a shooter that makes sense for once, unless you're not mowing down hundreds of bad guys. Now they're robots, and it makes actual sense what you're doing.
Oh yeah, my god, I'm gonna have to get it now, Ian.
Yes, get it.
Like,
get it.
Telling me that it's good.
Told you it was good. Everybody is like, oh, I'll wait until it's on sale. And that's why they don't make good games anymore. Okay?
Or money off of them.
Oh, that's cold, Ian. That was so passive. You were like, you were thinking of me when you said that. So you were.
Everybody was just said that to me.
All right, well, how about this, Steel Gray? You can go ahead and talk about what you've been playing. Steel Gray.
I've been playing Diablo 3, and people don't really need to hear about Diablo 3 a lot, but I've been playing hardcore mode, and it's fun. You know, you have to play differently, you have to struggle to survive, otherwise you die, and then yes?
Is that why you were late today?
No, I was sleeping.
You should have just said yes, Ian.
I added him on Battle.net to see if he was online, so he didn't add me back, and I assumed that meant he wasn't, so.
Yeah. We were trying to search you out, Ian.
Yeah. I was taking a slight nap. The other game I've been playing is Max Payne 3. Very good game. Very good game. Like, I would, you know, double my recommendation for, like, Binary Domain and say you should get Max Payne 3 as well. Very intelligent shooter. Very well done. Max is just narrating the whole thing all along, you know. It's amazing.
Ian.
Yes.
I'm going to wait until it goes on sale.
Don't wait until it goes on sale to get Max Payne 3, because they have to sell a lot of copies of this game to break even. It's in development for a long time as well. So you should definitely get Max Payne 3. Don't let the fact that it came out the same week Diablo 3 came out. Yeah, what?
But it wasn't Rockstar's money that was lost. That was Remedy's before they closed.
Yeah. Still, you know, I think you should definitely get it because it's a good game. It's fun and it's well written. I mean, I'm not saying, oh, it's well written for a video game. Like, Diablo 3 is well written for a video game, but no, Max Payne 3 is actually well written. It's a very good story, and you feel kind of sad for Max. You know, he's not a typical hero, and he's not like a typical anti-hero either. Like, you know, typically anti-heroes are like just heroes who have a mean streak or whatever. No, Max is a fucking a loser. You know, he is an alcoholic. He's just drinking all along, and he makes excuses about his drinking. It's ridiculous, and you actually believe him. He's believable as a character.
Max Payne, or this incarnation of Max Payne, it makes me think of, even though I've never seen it, that guy from Breaking Bad.
Oh God!
And it also makes me think of House from the House show.
Yeah, he's very similar to those characters. Yeah.
Eric's like, you idiots.
No, I'm not going to go off on a tangent.
Jacob, that puts you off of it. That makes me really excited about it. Like,
I didn't say it puts me off of it.
The way that you said it, it sounded like you were kind of talking about how Bryan Cranston, the guy from Breaking Bad, was like, oh, it reminds me of like that guy from Breaking Bad, and you kind of laughed about it. I was like, yes, guy from Breaking Bad.
Dennis, Dennis, I talked about Breaking Bad on the podcast, and you didn't say anything. You love Breaking Bad, dude.
I do. I love Breaking Bad. It's because Matthew's not here.
All right. Well, anything else, Ian?
No. Those are the two games.
All right. Well, I guess that leaves Jen. Jen, what have you been playing?
I have a laundry list of stuff I've been playing. I'll try to keep it brief.
Can I guess on one of them?
No. Because, you know, everybody knows. I've been playing Diablo 3. I've got, like, three characters. My hardcore player died because the server lagged when I was playing by myself, so I'm a little sore about that.
That's
really bad. I played a little Minecraft 360. I reviewed that on the Game Ranks channel. I played a little of Dragon's Dogma and the Spec Ops The Line demo. Liked one, didn't like the other. Not in that order. You can just watch the videos to find out cryptic text. Okay, anyway, I'm about to start Ghost Recon Future Soldier, and a game that I played for 4 hours today that has put me in such a sour mood. I've been trying to do the perfect run on Super Mario Galaxy 2, and if you aren't familiar with it, it's like you have one hit point, essentially. You have one hit point, and you have to get through this gauntlet of the most difficult things that Mario Galaxy 2 can throw at you. And I am going crazy from having trying to beat that. I've probably spent about 200 lives. I've probably been playing it for about 4 hours. And I don't know where game ends and reality begins anymore.
So is it like Battletoads?
It is! It is my Battletoads! Super Mario Galaxy 2 is my Battletoads right now.
I'm glad you got that reference. Okay.
Oh my god. Don't even talk to me about Battletoads. If I had to review Battletoads for Game Ranks TV, it would just be swearing the whole time.
You should do it. We would love it.
And at the very end, he says, get it.
God.
At the end of a long string of curses.
Personally, I hate games that do that, you know, like Battletoads. You'd have to guess where the platforms are coming, especially in the race scenes. And it's like, oh, if you don't memorize where the fuck it's coming from, I'm going to die, aren't I? Yes, you are. You know, it's like, why? Give me some indicator where the hell things are coming from.
There is a really big difference between basing a whole game off of that, like Battletoads, and basing one level off of it on, like, in Super Mario Galaxy 2. It is, to be fair to Super Mario Galaxy 2, it's the very last level. It's the last possible level that you can beat. After, like, 240-some levels that you can beat before that, it is the last level. And I have a lot of fun while I'm playing it, but it's driving me slowly insane. I am fairly certain that I will be, like, posed over Josh with kind of a knife in my hand tonight. Just for, like, 5 minutes, and then go back to sleep, and I don't know.
Alpha Tango Delta.
Oh, God, he's back here. He's back here.
That's how I play Raven Origins. I mean, you have to get everything perfect so that you can get all the achievements in it, and even though each level is maybe 1 to 2 minutes long, you're doing 1 to 2 minutes long for 60 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just blows my mind. Yeah, it's like, oh, fuck, I screwed up again. And then, like, I look at the clock and it's like, oh, 2 hours have passed, and this level is only supposed to be a minute long. What the fuck have I been doing, you know, for just 2 hours? Oh, you know, you've been playing this
level the same way.
Yep. It's great, though. And
my keyboard over that game.
It's like Jen says. I mean, it's okay to make levels like that. Just don't make the whole game like that. If like Battletoads, it's ridiculous. Yes.
All right. Well, Jen, have you been playing anything else?
No, that's my list. I tried to make it compact, so
you did
that's
a good
it.
Job. You did a good job.
Thanks.
I don't think it even warrants me to discuss what I've been playing because it's the same thing every week.
UFC, UFC 3.
Yeah, UFC 3 and League of Legends. So let's just move on because there's nothing interesting that's happened in those games that I can't talk that I haven't already talked about. So this brings us near the end of our podcast. Do you guys have any comments on anything we've discussed today that you want to get off your chest?
Apparently the 30th is shutting down thing. Yeah, when I reported it, I said it was new. No, it's not new. It's actually what you guys were saying.
Yeah. No, I just checked it like a few hours ago. Yeah, they just closed. They just closed. So consider that breaking news on the podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
Even though
breaking it
won't
go up until
next
podcast, week.
Yeah, that won't go up until
This has been your breaking news from the past.
All right, well, we don't usually do this, but there's a certain artist who's been good to us, 8-Bit Bandit. We love you, 8-Bit Bandit. They've provided us with intro and outro music for a long time now. We're going to plug their new album, Future Sleep Dopamine Levels. You can buy it at beatport.com. Go buy 8-Bit Bandit's music. You're listening to him right now, probably. He's an awesome artist. And we appreciate everything he's done in letting us use that music. So, I guess, without further ado, this has been the best gaming podcast ever. Bye!
Bye.
Bye.
Die.